Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Miracle Max Montana. What's up, buddy?
Not the Minnesota Miracle Man anymore?
Not the Minnesota. No, this is more of a Miracle Max.
Miracle Max?
Yeah, like Billy Crystal in the Princess Bride type of situation.
Yes, okay.
He's mostly dead. And our guest today, director of basketball performance for the Stanford Cardinal men's basketball team, Corey Schlesinger. Thanks for coming over.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
So, you know, we've never really had a basketball guest. We've never focused on basketball training, but we're going to be able to answer one most important question above all else that we get all the time, is working with very tall athletes. So Corey's going to provide us some insights there, as that's his whole life, is training tall people. But before we get into that, I want to talk about basketball is such a high skill sport, and a lot of times doesn't really have a training culture, like a lifting culture. It just has a practicing basketball over and over culture.
Right.
So how do you strike this balance between making sure the guys have enough energy for basketball training as well as developing the physical side of things?
Man, to be honest, you're manipulating. You're manipulating personalities. You're trying to figure out, honestly, like, how can you make lifting cool? I mean, think about it. It's all about the sneakers. Mm-hmm. It's all about the looks, right? You got to make lifting that way. And so for me, I got to just make their intent super high. So how do you do that? You regress a lot of the complex patterns. Don't get me wrong. I love the Olympic lifts, snatch, clean, jerk, all that. But 7'2" wingspans sometimes doesn't necessarily agree with each other, right? So we find different ways of loading. And so we'll do that through a lot of trap bar variations, use the center mass bells a ton, kettlebell variations, but whatever I can to make them just feel awesome, right? So essentially, yeah, we're filling up the jersey a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it's the only sport where you're wearing a tank top year round, right? So you gotta have some arms, but give them some confidence in those regards, but you just gotta make it cool, essentially.
What are some things that you've done to help build buy-in for the basketball players? I know some basketball guys be like, oh, if I lift too much, it's going to mess up my shot, that kind of stuff.
Right.
How have you educated your guys towards the importance of the weight room?
Well, I've been very fortunate that I actually played the game. Now, not like, oh yeah, Corey played pickup, he knows basketball. I played college basketball, believe it or not, even though my stature doesn't really say so.
You're a short ginger.
Necessarily the biggest profile you see in the NBA. But with that being said, that's an automatic buy-in, right? It's like, dude, this guy played at the next level. He understands. He have the same vocab. You're going to talk the same language. But for me, you got to do what you do, right? So I got to actually lift too. Mm-hmm. Right? If they see me trying to get awesome, that's what I always call it, getting awesome. Because in their heads, they're like, okay, that's what he's trying to achieve. So for me, I just try to implicate what I'm trying to do with them. So, yeah, I do the exact same thing they're doing. And so as far as the buy-in, that part's easy because, look, they want to make it to the next level. And the guys that I get are generally smaller, a lot more frail. You know, maybe don't have the athleticism that they need to be at the next level. So as far as just the education aspect, and then our frequency. I mean, it's pretty much mandated. We train every single day. And I know that's a very, how should I say this? It's very untraditional in the seams that you see in in-season training. Most basketball teams, they train 1, 2, sometimes none during the week. We train actually every single day that we compete or that we practice. So just the training frequency in itself just allows, there is no ifs, ands, and buts. We're going to do this. So
that's something I've found to be actually really useful in sports where the people compete really frequently. So baseball and basketball being the two main ones there, is that higher frequency training can be really useful because it allows you to make more subtle adjustments.
Absolutely.
You know, if you have someone who only trains twice a week and then they have a really hard practice or you know, they played more minutes in the game than they were playing on, so now you have to totally adjust one of those sessions. So maybe the plan was to squat, to train twice a week and squat once one of those times. Well, now if their legs are shot from practice that day, like, okay, well, where do we move the squat? There's only one other option.
Yeah. Right.
Where if you're training 6 days a week, you know, you can take two sets away here, add one here, add one here, and still equate the volume throughout the week.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the number one problem we ran into is, yeah, okay, now we're in exams, or my girlfriend broke up with me, or I didn't wake up for breakfast, whatever. I mean, there's every excuse known to man in team sports, especially with my guys. So at that point, look, if I only have 1 to 2 times to train them, if we miss one of those sessions, that's 50% of the training of the week. Well, what the hell am I going to do now, right? So now I'm going to wait till next week? Okay, great, right? So the idea with us for the high-frequency training, do they come in shitty? Just kick them out of the weight room. Hey, man, you know what? Just go get some shots up. You'll be all right. So you only lose, what, 10% of the training that week? You can make that up.
So let's get into what people really want to hear about.
Yeah.
So you've got these guys, 6'10", you know, seven feet tall, long arms, long legs, really bad lifting bodies.
The worst.
So what adjustments are you making and things you're focusing on to be able to get these tall guys moving weights, getting stimulus?
Unfortunately, like, the world wasn't made for them, you know? So, like, even the chairs we're sitting in right now, their life sucks, you know? Like, getting up and getting down, getting in their cars, right? Sitting in their bed even, right? They have no interaction with the actual floor. So when I first get them, we actually go to the wrestling room. And that's where we utilize a lot of the jiu-jitsu training. Now, obviously, we're not combating, right? But just some easy partner training, knowing where they are in space. We use low-level gymnastics, learn how to interact with the ground. We actually start literally from the ground up. So you can use some DNS principles, like that's like childhood development, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I got to get them to interact with gravity, because essentially, once they grew up, they don't want to be back down there, right? And then you take it into sport, they play on a hardwood surface. So, and they're jumping really high. So what's the one thing they don't want to do is fall down. So they'll do every strategy known to man. And of course, you know what that looks like. Stick one leg, twist, blown out knee. So if I can give them all the strategies in the world to interact with the ground, you know, ninja training, if you will, then I can put them in a position to mitigate those potential injuries. Now, as far as, you know, training those long levered athletes, look, we can just throw them on machines and do HIIT training and make them look awesome and cool, right? But I don't think we're getting a lot accomplished as far as their athletic development. So from that perspective, once again, we use a lot of trap bar variations. We use a lot of kettlebells and a lot of center mass bells. Now, what you'll see, especially with a lot of our training, we do snatch, we do clean, we do jerk. And that is kind of like, oh man, how do you do that with those athletes? At the end of the day, they're still human, right? It's just the way you apply it. So a very simple philosophy, you find the best in the world at what they do, you find a practical way to apply it to your population. Who are the strongest people in the world? Strongman competitors, powerlifters, weightlifters. Cool. I got to find a way to do that for my athlete. So, yeah, we'll use a lot of blocks. You know, blocks obviously make a lot of sense. Those dudes don't need to be all the way down to the ground pulling, right? We'll do a lot of just pull variations, limit the catches. I mean, do my guys really need to catch? Now, obviously, there's some very positive aspects to the catch, especially for athletic development and as far as just absorbing those forces. But at the end of the day, like, just put an engine in the car, right? The suspension, like, they already jump and run all day, right? The more I can get out of that, just squeeze the juice out of those major lifts, but they got to be successful. And the intent, if a guy does a full snatch compared to a snatch from a block, the intent's way different because it's a lot more comfortable for him. Now, we don't want to create like a comfortable environment, like, oh, it's safe. No. We want to put them in positions where they can actually execute at a high level. And so, yeah, from that perspective, yeah, we dumb down and water down a lot of the typical traditional lifts, but once again, as long as I have the intent there, I mean, hell, we can just throw a med ball. You know, you still get the same thing, right?
Yeah, so that effect, the med ball throws and stuff. I used to work with a ton of volleyball players, so similar type of issues, but every basketball player, every volleyball player, they all want to jump higher.
Right.
But when you look at their sport practice, they might have already jumped hundreds of times that day.
Yes.
So jumping more isn't really a good strategy towards jumping higher.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the ways that you address that, you know, the vertical jump in your guys' training?
Well, at the end of the day, like you said, they jump all the time. They're probably masters of their profile jumping. So who am I to say, oh, I can make that better? The only thing I can do is just get them stronger. Like, what's that? That's the foundation, right? That's a foundation of force. If I can make them maximally stronger, that's going to take care of itself. So what I do is I just give them strategies to be able to organize so they can jump higher. Are we training that extensively? Hell no. Are we training intensively? Yeah, to a certain degree, but they're getting that volume on the floor. And let's think about that. These guys are basically mini pros. They're playing year round. So I don't need to get those max effort jumps from them. What I need is just to get them cock strong. Relative, okay, relative. But for them, yeah, let's squeeze the juice out of max strength. And then you can get cute. Like, everybody wants to play around with the force velocity profiles. Don't get me wrong, that's cool. But if they're not strong to begin with, putting a tendo unit on a bar ain't doing shit, right? Cool, you're moving a bar, a 20 kilo bar at 1.8 meters a second. You got really strong, good job. You know, you see that all the time. And I'm just like, dude, get strong first, and then we can move on to the fun stuff. That's usually year three, year four, to be honest. Because when they come to me, it's not a training age of zero. It's a training age of negative two, right? It's like, man, just to get them to homeostasis is, let's just get healthy first. Because most of the kids I get coming in, early specialization and all that, they're broken.
Yeah.
You know, they're broken from jump street. So just being able to say, oh, dorsiflexion, what a concept, right? Save your knees. They don't even have that because of the shoes they wear, taped and braced year round. It's tough.
When you get a lot of athletes, especially, like, I can imagine the basketball culture coming into college, you know, like teaching them the Olympic lifts or teaching them any of these movements. Do you find that if you have someone that's like, this is going to take, you know, you do an assessment, like, this is going to take me too long to teach this guy, you just don't even do those things? Or is the whole team, everybody participates at some regressed level? Or
great question. I throw the kitchen sink at everyone, because they'll surprise you with what they can do, and they'll surprise you with what they can't do. Like, I got guys that can actually, like, rack a bar, but they can't pull it. And it's like, well, what the hell happened there, right? Like,
right.
I mean, it's just a teaching progression from that point. Or you got guys who can snatch, but they can't squat. So it's like, well, I don't want to take away, like, a good lift. Right, so everybody gets the kitchen sink thrown at them, obviously, with some intelligence. Right, we're not loading up the bar and just seeing what you got. But everybody's going to do some form or fashion of a snatch, clean, and we start with the bar, or excuse me, we start with a kettlebell, center mass bell, and then we work up to a barbell. Now with the barbell movements, we do complex every single day, in some form or fashion. That's my readiness testing. So if I see whatever they're doing with a 40 to 60 kilo load on the bar, see it daily, then I can see what's going on with their body. So all of a sudden, that pull don't look as good as it usually does, even though it's just 60 kilos. Well, what's going to happen later when I load that? It's probably going to be pretty shitty, right? So from that perspective, that's my readiness testing. Opposed to doing, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of applied sports science that you can apply to say, oh yeah, his HRV is this or whatever. But look, at the end of the day, it's about when the bar is in your hands and what you can do. So with that perspective, we use barbell complexes every single day. The reason for that is, look, if I'm trying to get them better at it, you need exposure to it.
Right.
So if they're doing it every day, they're going to get better. Now, from that decision-making process, from, oh man, it looks good today, let's let it ride. Let's start loading up, singles, doubles, triples, whatever we're doing that day, and let's see what we got. If it doesn't look so hot, we'll regress it. Now we'll go to a trap bar variation. So instead of doing a clean, they'll do a trap bar clean. So essentially they pull the exact same and they catch the exact same. The only difference is they don't catch it, right? So once again, it's just taking the intent of the lift. It's not necessarily saying we have to rack a bar just to do a clean.
Sure.
So we can still pull as hard as we can and still hit that in that power position, which what we're looking for. But do we actually have to have a straight bar and hold it up here to say we did a clean? Not necessarily.
Right.
So just put the bar in the center, or use a trap bar, have the weight in the center of mass, way easier to manipulate, higher intent. More than likely, you're probably going to get better adaptations too, because the intent's there. They can actually rip the bar. They don't have the complexity of pulling and hitting high hip and all that fun stuff, right? So that's why
So you mentioned the early specialization. Yeah, basketball is, like a lot of other sports, I guess, in the U.S. now, soccer, and with this club sport culture, and they play all year round. It's sport practice, not much physical, general physical prep. And you get basketball players, you know, who's the best fifth grader in America? Who's the best sixth grader?
Top 100 fifth grader.
Yeah.
Right? Who cares?
Yeah. And they're doing all that stuff. So if we make Corey Schlesinger the czar of American basketball, what are some adjustments you would make to that system?
that's the real goal. Like, I would love to be the superintendent of physical culture, if you will, for basketball. But ideally, you got to play. Like, let them do other stuff. Get them off the court. Like, let them play soccer. Let them do other stuff. But as far as, like, general prep, like, from an early age, can you move well? Like, all right, let's put them through a jungle gym. Great. Just do simple stuff. Like, when I get my guys, it's basically physical education class. Like, it's PE from back in the early 70s or 60s or whatever. And I sometimes get clowned on for it. It's like, Corey, why are we hanging from a chin-up bar? Well, your shoulder health sucks, right? You can't stabilize anything. So being able to hold for a long period of time, yeah, you actually get some shoulder stability. Great. And other examples, just being on the ground, right? So what's the number one limiting factor with most of my basketball players is their foot and ankle complex. So feet are weak because they wear crazy shoes like I'm wearing right now, and they switch shoes every other day. They got a closet full of like 30 sneakers that they cycle through, right? Which looks fresh as shit. But at the end of the day, like, dude, your foot sucks. So even just having them walking around on grass, all of a sudden, like, oh man, my feet are, and they, dude, that's being a human, right? So really I regress back to, well, how can I make them a better human before I can make them a better basketball player? So general calisthenics, low level gymnastics, like I was saying earlier, the partner jiu-jitsu training, just being able to push and pull each other a little bit, being able to understand what it's like to fall. Kids don't even want to fall anymore, right? It's like, oh no, like I scraped my knee, Timmy, we're pulling you out of football now. It's like, dude, come on. Like, these kids, that's why there's no resilient kids anymore. Like, that's why they can't handle adversity, because they get pulled out of stuff so early. I know I digress with a lot of this, but it's like, this is what I deal with. Like, I get these kids that come in, like you said, oh, I was top 500 in fifth grade, and in 12th grade, I was top 20. And you get to the college level, the next thing you know, you're not that guy anymore, right? Now you got other guys that are coming for your spot. So how do you handle that adversity? Most of them point fingers. It's the other dude. And it's like, you know what? If you actually had some resilience physically, you'd be able mentally to handle a lot of these things. And once again, in basketball culture, you know, the physical training, see guys on BOSU balls, like, yeah, flipping up pink dumbbells, and you're like, oh yeah, we're really training, bro. And, you know, like, I love LeBron. LeBron, you're doing a lot for the culture. I get it. The training videos need to stop. Because I'm telling you, you're not helping my cause at all.
You look at, yeah, you know, LeBron's probably the kind of guy who could look at a barbell and get stronger.
Absolutely.
Do a couple push-ups and gets jacked. You think that we often see in weightlifting and stuff where the European model tends to be better, and as European players have become more and more prominent in basketball, do you think that they're taking a better long-term development model with a lot of those guys?
It's interesting you say that. So, like, for my trip to Brazil, I saw a lot of the youth development, especially in their soccer. And, you know, most of the international coaches that I speak with, they actually think we have the juice.
Oh, yeah?
But we think they have the juice. So it's super interesting to have this discussion. It's like, well, you guys have all the talent. Well, it's like, well, why do we have all the talent? Well, maybe it's because of the environment that they grow up in, right? For them, we look at it like, oh, man, you guys, you know, you get generally prepping. Or, you know, you got soccer players who are playing shoeless most of their childhood, and you're just like, oh, man, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. But when they get up through the rankings and the system, like, no one's actually training, right? And there's not actually a lifting culture within the team sport aspect. So it's like, no one has it right, right? But everybody has it right at the same time because they're still producing. So at the end of the day, it's the dude, right?
Yeah.
Like LeBron. It's the dude. Like, yeah. You can't make a LeBron, right? You just hope that they don't break. And so from my perspective, look, long-term development, I think from the Western society, the way we look at it, yes, they have it figured out, but they're looking at us the exact same way. Like, nah, man, nah. We don't have strong, fast, whatever. They're just naturally that way, right? Not like how we develop athletes here in the States. So, you know, I would like to say, yes, they have it right, but from the conversations I'm having, they say we got it right.
Because, you know, I follow basketball a decent bit, and I hear more talk, you know, with the one-and-done rule and how's that going to change, and hear some talk about, like, NBA team academies
right,
potentially being developed, the way that European soccer clubs have, you know, Manchester United Academy down to 9-year-old kids.
For sure.
And they're all through that system. But I hear that, and I think, like, oh, that would be great if it's done well. I just think that the chances of it actually being done well, it's like, well, now in your AAU team, instead of the Compton Magic, you know, it's just going to be the Compton Lakers, or whatever, and they're going to do the same shit. They're just going to play basketball all the time rather than it's like only the strongest survive. The people who are most well suited for it are the only ones who can survive such high amounts of sport training.
Right.
Where if they were to couple some general physical prep, like, okay, our 12 and unders are going to do 50% GPP, 50% basketball.
Right.
And then it just keeps shifting more and more as they become more and more developed. But it's just would be such a big cultural shift I think it'd be a hard time for it to actually happen.
Absolutely. Well, at the end of the day, it's about money. Yeah. How can money affect this? Like, how can people make money off this? And that's where AAU comes in, right? That's what started making money. Why? Because the shoe deals came in, right? So they're getting these kids, man, I'm identifying this kid at eighth grade.
Yeah.
Oh, his AAU program, you best believe they're going to have Nikes, right?
Yeah.
And then, Nike. Now he's got to go to that Nike school. Okay, cool. Now you're going to sign that Nike deal where you're going to make me $150 million year one, right? So who's going to make money from it?
Yeah.
And if you can figure that out, hopefully it benefits the athlete opposed to the other way around. But you can look at NCAA and it's like, are we really benefiting the athlete with the free education?
Yeah.
Right? Now, don't get me wrong. At Stanford, I honestly think we are, because you get a Stanford degree, you good. You're going to be a guy. You're going to be a in life, you know. But you don't always hear that scenario. You know, you hear about kids who graduate who can't even read. And you're like, oh, sweet. You got that piece of paper, but you can't even articulate yourself in an interview. How's that going to work out? Just because you play doesn't mean anything. So that's where, look, someone's taking advantage of someone in any situation. But as long as we have the thought of, okay, this is the health and the longevity of the student athlete or whatever we're trying to accomplish, whether the little kids all the way to the pros, then we should be all right. But someone's going to manipulate that in some form or fashion.
When you look at basketball players' weight room numbers, like, just for our audience, our meathead powerlifters and weightlifters.
For sure.
You know, what's a strong basketball player? Like, who is a basketball player you've been around or worked with who's like a strong weight room guy?
So, that's such a good question. And I have so many answers for it. I'll try to keep it short and simple. What you find is the best basketball players are your worst weightlifters.
Yeah.
And your best... or your worst basketball players are your best weightlifters. So
you think a lot of that's probably in that the best basketball body is the worst lifting body.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, like
Kevin Durant, be really hard for that guy to lift.
20 push-ups, I want to see it, right? Yeah. Like, but at the end of the day, who cares, right?
Yeah.
You put the ball in the hole. But I did have a unicorn, and I had one unicorn who had it all. Strong, long, and can play, right? So some of his numbers, he hit a 130 kilo clean for a double from blocks.
How tall was he?
6'8", 6'10 wingspan, 250 lean, like lean. Wow. And I was like Adonis, you know, that was always fun. Back squat, well over 200 kilos, like probably like 240, 250 if I really pushed him. But, you know, that's the other thing too, especially with social media now, everybody wants to display their athletes. And it's like, dude, like, does he need to hit like 270?
Right.
Like, no, Jesus, back it off, man. He plays basketball.
Yeah. Well, and it's such a, as a strength coach, such a simple, the simplest metric, be like, hey, to go to your head coach and say, well, we got, and I see this more in football, certainly, well, we've got this many guys who bench 400 and this many guys who squat 500.
Sweet.
And I said, well, how much better do they get at football?
Right.
Or how much better do they get at basketball?
Right. And that's where it's like, what is strong enough? Like, that's the age-old question, especially in basketball. What is strong enough? For me, can they play? Are they available?
Yeah.
I mean, they were brought here because they can play the sport, right? They weren't brought here to lift weights. Now, do I like them lifting weights? Yeah, of course, right? And do I want to have some numbers? Yeah. Am I going to push the envelope on those numbers? That's up for debate. You going to play a lot of minutes? Or are you going to be the, you know, the walk-on sitting beside me? You the walk-on beside me, I'm going to break your ass. Right? Like, why not? Like, you're just going to we'll make you look awesome in warm-ups, right?
Yeah.
So, like, who cares? And then you make me feel a lot better about my job. Now, the guy who's putting up minutes, hey, man, you know what? These trap bar variations are very good for you.
Yeah.
And this is why they're good for you, right?
When you look at guys in the NBA, who is someone who strikes you as, like, that dude's really doing his training really well?
Man, Vince Carter.
Yeah,
Vince Carter.
Been around for 20 years.
Exactly,
so.
And that's where I have the conversation with my athletes all the time. I'm like, look, Vince Carter values his training at a high level. Like, I'm very fortunate to know the strength coaches there, and they told me his work ethic at the age of 40 or whatever he is, like, he still worked out almost every day. And he's put in his time for general physical preparation just to prepare his body. Dude's 40-some years old and still hooping. That's crazy to talk about. Like, you got guys that are breaking down at 26, right? So if you do it early in your career, dude, you're going to be fine, man. You're going to be fine. What you really hear is when the guys, like, that go overseas and play, mm-hmm. and when they come back, they're like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I was very fortunate to have you, the nutritionist, the physical therapist, uh-huh. that doesn't exist over there. I'm like, I know. Yeah. I know.
And the people who don't take advantage. Yeah. I mean, you hear about LeBron spending, what, $1.5 million a year, and he's traveling yeah. with his masseuse, yep. physio, nutritionist, trainer, everything. Especially 82 games, and they go to the finals every year, 100 games. Like, that's a lot of pounding to be 6'8", 260, and running on hard surface. And
supposedly, he's at the peak of his career, or coming down yeah. from the peak, but his numbers are getting better. Yeah. So what do you say, right? Yeah. It's not always the guy who's actually the best. I'm not saying LeBron's not the best. He is. But, like, it's the guy who plays the most. Mm-hmm. So how do we make them play the most? I like to think getting strong helps. Great. That doesn't necessarily work for everyone, because what the demands of the game doesn't necessarily need that. You don't, like, now until the game changes, where, like, at halftime you put a squat rack on the court and whoever squats the most weights gets points. Like, yeah, we're going to train a lot different. But sometimes, man, it's just, yes, I hate the word maintenance, so I don't want to use it, but it's just, you got to do whatever you can to make sure that the engine is running. And if you can do that, I don't care what form that takes. If you're doing yoga all day, which I'm not saying I'm a proponent of that, just saying, Kevin Garnett did it. He had a very long career. He was also that dude, too. So at the end of the day, everybody looks good at whatever they're doing if they're that dude.
Yeah, and basketball seems like more – every sport has that. The guy who excels, everyone tries to copy him.
Right.
And when Michael Johnson broke the 400-meter world record, and you know, his coach at Baylor, Clive, his last name's escaping me, but – they're all speed endurance guys. It was just speed endurance. All right, well, it's all speed endurance. Let's run really upright like that. And then someone else breaks the 400. Well, what's this guy do? Oh, let's change everything.
Right, right.
Well, what's Michael Jordan do? You know, he's got Tim Grover and kind of change things there. And then, you know, everyone else, they could be doing dumb shit. But if they're, you know, if God reached down to ordain them as right. you know, basketball God, then everyone's going to copy him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would think, like, just looking at dudes, Giannis has got to be, like,
heck yeah,
just a monster. I heard Jason Tatum in an interview the other week talking about, you know, how he's trying to gain weight this offseason and become more physical. And
that's the one thing you hear about in basketball, especially from the sport coaches. You know, he can get 20 to 30 pounds this offseason, right? It's like, what? Like, okay, if I did put 20 to 30 pounds on him, let's just say, so obviously he's optimizing sleep and nutrition and all these other things. Well, what is actually happening from a force standpoint? Like, are those numbers matching? If I add 20 pounds to him and all of a sudden his ground contact time is a lot longer,
yeah,
not a better basketball player. I'll be honest, I think the best thing that could happen, especially in basketball, is to actually take every strength coach out of the weight room. Just screw weights for a year, okay? Just put them in an environment where they can just own their body, because they're still getting used to these long levers. Make sure they can execute that. Then, okay, let's start adding external resistance. Okay, body weight vests, medicine ball throws, whatever. But you can go away with a lot with just that. But, you know, of course, me, you know, I'm a meathead. I want to lift weights. But
in the collegiate basketball culture, the strength and conditioning, is there still, like, you think there's a lot of coaches pushing the numbers too much? Like,
I'll say
name names, but I mean.
Yeah, I'll say this. There's a lot of coaches that validate their existence by saying, I mean, I kid you not, there's a specific program that I know that are like, we need as many 315 benchers as possible. Last time I checked, Kevin Durant couldn't even do one at 185 at the combine. Yeah. Kevin Durant's pretty damn good, right? Yeah. So it's like, okay, so who said that specific key performance metric, bench press, equates to winning?
Right.
No one ever, right? So it's these old traditions that still exist. Like, oh, yeah, bench press means strong. Nah, I'll be the first to tell you, we don't bench. We don't bench to a certain degree. Dumbbell bench, sweet. We use some Swiss bar variations, sweet. We ain't out there barbell benching, just hitting. Like, it's doesn't make sense for me. It doesn't.
Right.
So yeah, you still see it. It's still archaic, but at the end of the day, it's what the sport coach wants too. So you got to satisfy that.
Right.
He's the one who's paying the bills. So.
Really.
So Corey, where can people find you on social media and follow you?
Instagram is where I'm at. So /strength, SCHLES strength. But yeah, post a lot, have a lot of funky variations. Not trying to be sport specific or anything like that, but at the end of the day, just trying to find a way to load long lever athletes.
You guys are shooting a lot of weighted basketballs?
Bowling balls.
Absolutely, from half
bowling
court.
Balls.
Some bowling balls, some baseballs. Attack it from all angles.
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ado, or on Facebook, and you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And if you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, or power building, visit juggernautcoaching.com. Subscribe to the YouTube, subscribe to the podcast, YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. Beers with Chad almost every Friday. So check that out, bonus episodes to The Jug Life. And thanks for watching. Thanks to Corey.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Chad Wesley Smith at Chad Wesley Smith at Juggernaut Training. We'll see you next week.